Hello, everyone, and welcome to Trad Tasman Talk for another week. It is just past 6 p.m. Melbourne time on this Friday, the 29th of May 2020. I'm Tim Wilms, editor in chief of The Unshackled. We've got to wait the weekend here in Victoria until Monday when we're allowed to go to the pub, cafe, or restaurant.
Well, we have had that privilege for a while, but we do have the Queen's birthday on Monday, so that's a celebration for New Zealand coming up. I'm Dewa De Boer for Right Minds NZ. It's 8 p.m. here in Auckland, and welcome everyone to the show.
Yes, we are live on the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube channel. Say hello in the live chats, and if you're watching on the Unshackled channel here, you can send a super chat directly in a live chat comment. You just press the dollar button, choose your amount and your message, and we'll read it out throughout the show. So we may start with some breaking news, though it's not Trad Tasman related, though it is Anglosphere related, which is the reason why we do this show, because we're the two Anglosphere nations of the South Pacific. Mm-hmm. And obviously we've seen the disturbing another night of rioting in the city of Minneapolis and in the state of Minnesota, in the one of the Great Lakes states, after police brutality led to the death of a 45-year-old black man, George Floyd. And it seems that I wouldn't call them protesters, I just call them people taking advantage of their unrest, have begun looting all of the stores and businesses, and it's night over in the US. They just set fire to a police station, which was abandoned. And it's really, obviously things have been tense on social media as well, with Twitter deciding that they would fact check Donald Trump's tweets on mail-in ballots. And he has signed an executive order to hold social media companies accountable if they are going to start being editors rather than, or publishers rather than platforms. And well, Twitter, they've decided themselves to escalate the situation. This is what they did to his most recent tweet. "These thugs are dishonoring the memory of George Floyd, and I won't let that happen. Just spoke to Governor Tim Walz and told him that the military is with him all the way. Any difficulty and we will assume control. But when the looting starts, the shooting starts. Thank you." And Twitter said this tweet violated the Twitter rules about glorifying violence. However, Twitter is determined that it may be in the public interest for the tweet to remain accessible. Learn more. That's very gracious of Twitter to decide for the rest of us that a tweet from the President of the United States is in the public interest.
I know, and particularly their decision to glorify glorifying violence on a tweet denouncing the riots that are taking place. Obviously, after what was a very tragic case, and what seems to be quite a clear case of police brutality, what you have going on are riots, which are always inexcusable. They're not protests, and these people are not they're not after justice, right? It is rioting is a case of destroying other people's property, and in some cases, if you look at these videos, looting simply ways for people to acquire more material wealth for themselves while pretending to be angry about about a genuine injustice.
And of course, Twitter has taken no action against people on Twitter glorifying the rioting and looting and inciting violence against police officers, and also encouraging people to violate social distancing guidelines. It's funny that they were decrying people organizing peaceful anti-lockdown protests. Apparently they were threatening because they had guns but didn't use them, didn't desecrate any public property. They needed to be shut down, and the governors, they were right to lock everything down. But apparently now the progressive left has decided that, yeah, it's okay in this instance to violate social distancing guidelines.
That's right. The all talk of coronavirus seems to have completely disappeared from that news cycle. There's no talk about, you know, oh no, this has to stop because it will. There will be a new epicenter of the pandemic, and the pandemic's going to get worse. You know, the pandemic has completely disappeared from the American context, and this type of event is sadly rather common. I believe Ferguson was the last time that we saw a lot of this.
Missouri.
And, you know, in Missouri, yes. And, you know, we can go all the way back to the LA riots, of what I believe were the 80s.
92, well, Rodney King, who was whacked by LA PD officers. He did live, but it shocked a lot of people.
Yeah. And this looks like a similar case, but, well, worse than that. You know, this man is dead. And that's, usually these are, unscrupulous people taking advantage of the situation in order to riot, right? And then you don't end up with justice anymore because, you know, the lines between what's right and wrong, it gets completely blurred by, you know, in a sense, both sides taking advantage of the situation with, you know, these bad cops, you know, engaging in absolute brutality, and then on the other side, people, you know, destroying the property of their fellow citizens.
I mentioned this last night on the Uncuckables, but I think Candace Owens' comments about the rioting looting summarized it well, that you've all basically got sucked into the political media complex strategy here. The media, of course, love to fan the flames of racial division, and all of the most of these instances of police brutality and rioting occur in jurisdictions run by Democrats. The mayor of Minneapolis is a Democrat. The governor is a Democrat. But of course,
they promise you a left-wing, a socialist utopia. The Democrats, most of these places, and in this case, and I believe the last case as well, they're run by Democrats for, you know, generations often, and they don't have a fancy utopia. They have you know, horrible cases of you know, high crime rates, which leads to police brutality and also racial discrimination there with the way the police treat criminals. Because they will see more criminals of one particular ethnicity, and then they will, you know, ingrain that in the system. It becomes a vicious cycle, and all they do is just perpetuate that cycle and go around in circles.
And it's come to light that we both remember Amy Klobuchar, the U.S. senator for Minnesota, who ran for the Democratic nomination. She is a former prosecutor in Minnesota and actually declined to prosecute the police officer who's now been fired, who had his knee on the throat of George Floyd and apparently had about 19 complaints against him. So the this Democrat candidate for president is indirectly responsible for this man's death.
It's a similar, when they had a number of prosecutors run for the nomination this time, the Democrats, and every time a little bit of digging was found was done, usually some very strange behavior was turned up, and that you know, it's sad to see that was the case again here. And with, you know, not that you can see the future, I don't think you could blame her for this happening, but obviously there was some kind of cover-up that she was part of, which they were, you know, the point of having those investigations, the point of removing those cops from the force would be because you want to avoid situations like this. And when you've got a whole bunch of red flags, 19 of them, you'd think that by now they would have learned to take action. But clearly that is not the case. And like I was talking about the cycle, the vicious cycle that goes on, that's just part of it. Just, you know, covering the system, looking after itself.
Kamala Harris, she was the other former prosecutor from California who was running for president, and Tulsi Gabbard destroyed her campaign on the stage, talking about all the people she kept in jail for non-violent drug offences, so she could use them for cheap prison labour, and Kamala Harris couldn't reply.
Yeah. And that's all too common there.
And Trump is absolutely right to a tweet about restoring order. And I don't think he was threatening, glorifying violence with that tweet. I don't think he was threatening that we're going to start shooting. He was just saying that, look, this is just going to lead to more violence that you're trying to denounce. But of course, you always take the most negative spin on Trump's tweets.
That's right. They always willfully misunderstand him. That's just part of their narrative. That's the way they have to do it. But it is true. In these riots, looking back at past riots, people do get shot. People defend their property. I believe that was a case this morning that I saw, which would have been last night in the United States. Somebody was shot attempting to loot a store, where the store owner was acting in, presumably in self-defense. And so that's the case. More people will end up dying if these riots go on. People will come out and defend their property as well, which they're perfectly entitled to do.
I remember the 2011 UK riots, a year before the London Olympics. David Cameron took a very hard line on those, that this is just blatant criminal activity, plain and simple, and imposed very harsh jail sentences on those who are taking advantage of looting and burning down things. And there's still a lot of problems in the UK, but there haven't been riots like that since, and so that should be seen as a model there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what this is actually a strategy employed by the police more on the English, the British side, England, Australia, and New Zealand, is the cops do what they can to avoid riots, to avoid trouble. That's something we discussed on the show the past few weeks over the community roadblocks, which were basically set up by tribal groups. And sometimes even gangs to supposedly help slow the spread of coronavirus. And they may have been doing other things too, like smuggling drugs. But the reason the police didn't try to stop them is they were worried about riots, essentially. And so they play extra nice, and when they shouldn't, really, but they do, because that the ultimate goal there is to avoid riots, is to avoid social conflict and to avoid social confrontation. And who knows what the strategy in the United States is, but this this is not looking like it's going to ease off anytime soon.
And this sort of rioting after police brutality is not something that happened under the MAGA presidency. Remember, racial tensions really started to flare up, and these instances of police brutality were quite frequent under Barack Obama's presidency. I mean, Black Lives Matter was going all over the country in 2016.
Absolutely the case. And a lot of this is it becomes difficult to tie just to a president, although it's the overarching narrative that is pushed that bleeds through, and then it bleeds through from to these local levels, because these police forces are local police forces, right? These are local local prosecutors, but what happens? They're the ones that are standing up on the Democrat debate stage at the end, when it's an election year. So it all connects, and the web there is very, very large, very, very hard to dislodge. And this is why what's the solution here? What's Trump going to do? Well, other than attempt to repress these riots as quickly as you can, but that doesn't, that's not always easy.
Because they've spread to other cities now, including Los Angeles,
exactly.
Which is supposed to be locked down.
Exactly. So the lockdowns are over. Who would have known that riots were going to end the lockdowns? But that's in some way, either justice will need to be seen to be done very, very quickly. That may be one way to quickly curtail these. Simply attempting to stomp down on them you know, may not necessarily work, and not if it's done by the police anyway. And that's more of a case, especially in the United States, where this is for, you know, local shop owners to band together and to defend their sections of, you know, whatever their shops, wherever their shops are, or their properties are, or whatever it may be. These local community groups will actually need to work together to stop the looting.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the small business owners in Minneapolis who, they haven't participated in these instances of police brutality. So why should they be? What is the justification for looting their businesses? It would be terrifying. Okay.
And for the people who are doing the looting, the justification doesn't matter, right? It's just an excuse to go looting.
Mm. Exactly. Well, that was quite a massive detour there from what yep. we normally talk about, but it was yep. Breaking news and
exactly.
both of us
I'm seeing,
and our
seen,
audience.
Seen it. Yeah, seen it everywhere. I mean, people in the chat were already asking. We've been talking about Trump's tweet that we brought up, and I'm seeing in other places as well as I'm looking around. That tweet from Trump.
Yeah, there it is again.
Restrictions. Yeah, thanks for bringing it up. Again, that's what everybody's talking about right now, and that's what everybody's going to be talking about for the rest of the evening and tomorrow. And, you know, it will be quite interesting to see where that goes. We can only speculate. Hmm. So we'll cover what's been happening this past week. With a recap, as we always do, and then I suspect we may actually revisit this topic next week.
Well, somebody alerted me to the fact that given the time in the US, Trump's probably asleep because he hasn't responded to this yet, but when he gets up, he's going to be fucking furious.
He's already got the executive order against the, well, Twitter specifically, but this is not going to end well for Twitter, and who knows, Trump may do something very good, he may do something very bad, he may make the situation better, he may make it worse. You don't really know what Trump is going to do, and how people will respond to it, but it will be interesting nonetheless.
All right, let's go back to the crisis facing the Tasman nations at the moment, which is just liberate our jurisdictions from these continuing restrictions from the coronavirus, which, well, you go first in New Zealand because you're basically yep. COVID-free.
Well, that's thanks for beating me to my own news item there. But that is the answer. We're talking about the Americans, just their essentially their entire lockdowns evaporating in the after riots. New Zealand has one active case of coronavirus left in New Zealand. We've had no new cases for 7 days. Nobody in hospital, obviously. As far as it is, this coronavirus is completely gone. We have had one extra death. Yesterday, they reported one death, except this lady died last week. She was 96. And I'm going to read this quote here, because if you haven't seen it yourself, it's fairly unbelievable. And this is from the Director General, Ashley Bloomfield. I said here, it's important to note that Eileen was regarded to having recovered from COVID-19 at the time of her death. So she had been marked as recovered. COVID-19 is not recorded as the primary cause of death on her death certificate. However, after consideration, we have decided to include her death in our overall tally of COVID-19 related deaths, consistent with our inclusive approach to date, so that we have a good idea of the full impact of this condition on the health and well-being in New Zealand. So it's clear that a number of the deaths in New Zealand were not directly caused by COVID-19, but have been attributed as being, essentially hastening the death of someone already very, very sick.
Well, can I give your health authorities credit there for being transparent in their reasoning of classifying that recent death being due to coronavirus, and that allows people to, well, make up their own minds whether that person's death, a tragedy that it is something they should be concerned about, and whether they should stay home more.
Yeah. Yeah, but in terms of staying home, it's been the health authorities that have been forcing people to stay home rather than people being able to make their own decisions. And on the same day where we had where we've had down to the very last case, we had some changes in the restrictions now. Gathering limits have been set to 100 across the board. So any one establishment or space can have 100 people in it without any need for social gathering. Beyond that, the 2 meter social distancing is all still in force. There's a lot of extra requirements still on businesses, and especially the hospitality sector, and people are very seriously starting to ask questions now as to why any of these restrictions remain. When we've had no new cases for 7 days, we've had no community transmission for nearly 2 months, coming at least 1.5 months now. So,
but you're still going to stay at level two.
But we're still at level two for another month. So you can make your own judgment about what to do with that. But that is. And there are various other schemes that the government has implemented. There's now a new tier of benefits on for people who lose their job due to COVID-19. So you get like a double the normal unemployment benefit. There's a business subsidy that's continuing. All of these are continuing until September, the week after the election. So,
That's interesting timing there.
It's a weird coincidence, but you're gonna have to make up your own mind about that.
We talked about Trump's views on mail-in ballots. Has obviously the election in New Zealand is going to take place. The date is September 20th, isn't it?
Yes. 17th of September, to my knowledge. I'll have to quickly look that up for you.
Is there going to be any change in the voting 19th, options?
Sorry, 19th. Yeah, it's the 19th now. So as far as I know, they will open polling booths normally. I don't believe mailing in is normal, but you can request mail-in ballots, etc. But there hasn't been any real push, thankfully, for electronic voting, which I really don't like. And it appears that the election will go ahead normally. With the only exception being that you're not allowed to campaign with more than 100 people present. So there's huge restrictions essentially on the campaigning side, when obviously the Labour Party have an incredibly good advantage. And their restrictions of 100 people are likely to remain for another month, unless they're forced to change their mind. The current plan is to keep their opponents restricted for at least another month.
And we talked about Jacinta's Enabling Act. So would that be able to override the freedom to campaign during elections?
Currently, because the emergency powers are gone, the powers under the Health Act don't directly allow any interference with campaigning, except for the gathering limits. The contact tracing, all of that potentially will make campaigning very difficult.
Well, I'll go over Australia's numbers now. And of course, our federal government loves the infographics. I don't know what's wrong with your health department here. So this is...
we have infographics, but they're useless.
Yeah. This is as of the 3 p.m. the 28th of May. So total diagnosed cases of coronavirus since the pandemic began, or when cases started in Australia, is 7,150. We've had 103 deaths. We had our youngest coronavirus death earlier this week with a 30-year-old minor from central Queensland, though he did have underlying health conditions, but they didn't discover he had coronavirus until after he died. So it's quite, there's a lot of factors in there, but it's managed to cause quite an amount of concern in Queensland Health, and they've done a lot of contact tracing there. 6,580 people have recovered, so we have less than 500 active cases. 5 in intensive care, only 2 are on ventilators. 27 admitted to hospital, conducted 1.3 million tests, 0.5% positive. And my home state of Victoria is now the national leader in tests, having 480,000 tests. which is why we always have the most amount of new cases every day. But we've got a 0.3% positive rate, which is the lowest of any state and territory there. And of course, I've gone through previously the three-step framework for a COVID-safe Australia, but it's up to each state and territory to implement their own roadmaps to recovery. So June 1st, you're allowed to have 20 people over at your house, same at weddings, cafes, restaurants. Then June 22nd, all going well, is when cinemas and gyms will be allowed to reopen. New South Wales, they're going further from next week. They're going to allow 50 people at all respective venues. WA from June 6th, they're going the full step three with 300 allowed in pubs, clubs, cafes, restaurants, everything. So each state is going at its own pace. Obviously, Victoria is the slowest, and of course,
lucky you.
Yeah, Dan has flexed his muscle again today. He is continuing the if you can work from home, you must, and he's vowed that he's going to fine businesses who have their employees come into the office and encourage staff to dob in their employer if they're forced to come in to the office. Because, well, I do concede that those office workstations, they can spread any type of infection, but it should be up to the business itself. There shouldn't be a blanket rule. And I would much prefer, say, the workplace laws change. I mean, it's very hard to do just in a couple of days, that if you're able to work from home, you should be able to refuse the right to have to compulsory attend an office. That's what I would have preferred, rather than just but of course, Daniel Andrews being the socialist that he is, it's like, right, I'm going to decide for everyone.
Yeah, and that's always the case it is with these people. And but we have sort of seen this in New Zealand, where they're trying to properly legislate these things. So from a legal perspective, everything was starting to fall apart. That's where they brought in the special COVID level 2 order, which they made a few kind of mistakes with, where they were intending to restrict religious gatherings to 10. We talked about this last week, and they, you know, didn't. The way that they had worded things was rather open-ended, which was a good thing, because it meant that we were able to have religious gatherings with many, many more people than that. But they've since basically corrected it, so now it's locked to 100, and it's not really easy to bend that too much to go beyond it. But you know, whereas previously you could. So it takes them a couple of weeks to get the legislation right, because they don't always pass the right thing off the bat. So you do want to be careful there. It is quite humorous to follow anyway. But in terms of the legal effects of the lockdown in New Zealand, is basically done and dusted now that there's actual legislation to fully support it. But I don't believe that's completely the case in Australia yet either, especially with different states and territories doing different things.
Well, there was the National Cabinet meeting this morning, and there's been a lot more tension between the federal government and the state leaders, because Queensland, Western Australia, South Australia, Northern Territory and Tasmania are not budging on their hard border closures. Pauline Hanson, she is helping to assist a High Court challenge to Queensland's border closure. Businessman Clive Palmer, he was denied entry to WA. So given that he's a mining magnate, he's launched papers in the High Court, and he's also planning to challenge the Queensland government as well, because Australia's constitution, I've got it up here, section 92 says trade within the Commonwealth to be free on the imposition of uniform duties of customs, trade, commerce and intercourse among the states, whether by means of internal carriage or ocean navigation, shall be absolutely free. And of course, there's heaps of constitutional scholars on all the news networks who are saying, yes, this is, they have a very compelling case, since basically the public health crisis is over and now trade is significantly being restricted. But trying to guess what the High Court is going to decide is a mug's game.
Yes, absolutely. And it is the insanity of the whole thing that is completely apparent in New Zealand as well, where there is no public health crisis. There hasn't been a public health crisis in weeks, if not months. And the restrictions that are still in place are incredibly damaging. And so whether we're going to see any kind of real attempted compensation.
It's a metaphorical looting of businesses in Australia and New Zealand.
That's essentially right. Well, that's essentially what we're seeing. But you've got to be careful to come with your hands out begging, because if you complain too much, then you might not get the you might not get the handouts that are sort of some form of compensation. So the legal avenues here are completely shut. Although we do still have some active court cases. The courts are usually clogged in New Zealand anyway, and now that they've been shut for about 2 months, they will be very, very slow to get going again.
Anastasia Palaszczuk, the Premier of Queensland, she's coming under intense pressure and scrutiny over continuing this hard border closure, because she's vowed it's not going to be lifted until September, which obviously Queensland reliant on tourism. They can't wait that long.
We've had a similar date brought up for reopening the borders with Australia, the Trans-Tasman bubble, even though we should be able since you have open flights between several Australian states already, because several of your states are about as free.
Going that you'll be able to go from New South Wales to New Zealand, but not from New South Wales to Queensland.
Yeah, and it sounds like Jacinda is essentially rejecting that and saying, no, unless the entire internal border of Australia is open, you can't fly to Australia. And there are places in the Cook Islands that have been completely free of COVID-19 as well, or it's never even gotten there. Yet we still don't have, essentially normalized movement between those countries as well, even though there's, again, no community transmission there, none here, none in some places in Australia. And the lunacy of it all is starting to set, hit home to more and more people. But, the date that keeps coming up is September, which not for Australia is not related to the New Zealand election, but that's sort of everything comes back to the New Zealand election here, which is, we'll think about it after you vote for me.
Well, Queensland, they go to a state election on October 31st, and a lot of people have speculated what Anastasia Palaszczuk is doing with the hard border closure is political, because she doesn't want an outbreak close to the election time. And she got very narky to a reporter who questioned her hard border badge and saying, have you got family? Do you want them to get coronavirus? Is that all?
Yeah. Basically... That's a fancy way of saying, you're about to ruin my re-election chances.
and putting on her best Karen demeanor.
Yes. At least within New Zealand, we get to go back to semi-normal movement within the country. But a lot will happen is the other question. Because when you have massive economic uncertainty, are people going to travel? Are people going to spend money? Some people, yes, but on the whole, it becomes a numbers game. And the numbers that we're looking at here in New Zealand, every single week we'll have some more numbers here. We're seeing the number of Kiwis in employment fell by a record of 37,500 in April, as the effect of the lockdown began to impact the economy. And this was reported by Statistics New Zealand. So that's a huge fall in employment for New Zealand. We're talking, we just reached 5 million population. The latest job seeker data shows an extra 53,000 people signed up for the benefit. So that's direct unemployment. And another 40,000 of special grants being issued every week. So we're talking essentially at least another 100,000 New Zealanders who have either completely lost their jobs or lost parts, enough of their job to require extra help. That's the size of many of our small cities, if you were to take an entire chunk. And a lot of this is hardest on the West Coast and the South Island, where these places were heavily reliant on tourism. You're talking entire towns, industry wiped out, and the projections of unemployment are still about 8 to 10%, and these are probably the most optimistic ones, 8 to 10% by September.
There was a lot of
and at that point the grants won't have run out, right? Remember, to come back to September, that's when the free money supposedly it might run out.
Well, given the tensions now between the state premiers and the federal government as well, Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton, who doesn't pull any punches and he's a Queenslander, he's basically given his blessing to Pauline Hanson and Clive Palmer's High Court challenge. So with the National Cabinet meeting today, there was a lot of speculation how it would go, given that it had been going so well, but it's hit quite a snag now. Scott Morrison came out after the National Cabinet meeting saying that it will become a permanent fixture now. It will replace the Commonwealth, it's a COAG as it's called. Can't remember what COAG actually stands for. I'll look it up, because I was about to say CHOGM.
Play a guessing game.
Council of Australian Governments. That's what it is. CHOGM was the other one that I was thinking of. Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, which is all of the British Commonwealth. The nations are. I nearly said the wrong thing, but Scott Morrison's justification for continuing in the National Cabinet, which will continue to meet fortnightly, but under normal conditions, will meet monthly, is that it's a more decisive body. Yes, it was decisive when locking down Australia, but not as decisive in getting us out. But
the easy decisions.
We do want period governments, legislators to be more decisive. Sometimes they're going to be decisive in a bad way. You just hope that they're decisive in correcting their bad previous decisiveness.
And getting them to own up to their mistakes and their, is incredibly difficult. We're still obfuscating in New Zealand about, going early, going hard was the line that Jacinda ran every single day in the hope that if it were repeated often enough, everybody would believe it. Mm. But at the same time, you've got her standing up and saying, 48 hours before, the decisive action taken to lock everything down was, oh no, it's fine, right? There's nothing to worry about. Everybody calm down, nothing to panic about. And then, of course, when the risk of opinion polling turned, then everything was ratcheted up to 100. Everything was done suddenly as quickly as possible. And now it's all as slowly as possible. Everything has to open up because, the bogeyman of COVID-19, the coronavirus bogeyman, is what captures the media attention. So if there's any extra cases, then that's bad media, and therefore the tens of thousands of job losses have basically been footnotes when you think those would be the big stories, right? Any excess deaths that we've had from other causes, excess deaths from heart attacks, cancer, strokes, suicide, and on it goes. Those are not reported. Not every single one of those is selected out to be reported on. It's only what's in focus at the moment, which is coronavirus. That's the only thing that gets the media attention. That's what gets the for them, that's what makes the money, although they're very much struggling with that at the moment, which is
for a moment, because you sent me this Stuff article about the employment fall in New Zealand. I'll see if it comes up on the screen here. If people can see it here, I'll get rid of the desk there. Support our local journalism. This is Stuff, which used to be owned by Fairfax, then Nine Entertainment here. Help us build a brave new era for Stuff with fresh local ownership. Your contribution will enable us to start bringing you reliable, independent news and information you can trust.
Yeah.
I gather you won't be making a contribution.
No, I have not. Stuff was bought by its own CEO, whose name I can't remember, for $1. And she'll be selling, I believe, the Stuff Fiber in infrastructure to Focus or Chorus. Anyway, could be one of the other ones. And they will use that money to keep Stuff running for at least 2 years or 3 years, and then hope that they get enough donations or find a business model that works. And you know, that's what it's all about, is what brings in the money. And in many ways, that determines, because that determines the stories that get covered, that actually can determine the opinion polling, and to a certain extent the elections, and really the decisions being made by our cabinet here in New Zealand. Because you know, that's it's the reality is it's campaign season, it's election season. You've got Winston Peters speaking out a lot as well. He's been the one advocating for opening the borders with Australia quickly, saying we've got to be there now. We've got to, he's even said, level two needs to be over. We have to go to level one right now. You know, contradicting the prime minister. So the deputy prime minister, in a sense, in campaigning against the prime minister out in public. Of course, not actually getting anything done behind closed doors, but it's the campaigning. Same thing with the Hong Kong. You know, the end of a free Hong Kong, being, you know, with the latest changes. You know, that China, that you know, China is again projecting
The national
its force
security law.
over, exactly over Hong Kong, so they can have the authority over what happens in Hong Kong more strongly than they currently do. That's something that Winston Peters then spoke out against, but they had an announcement, a resolution by the Four Eyes against China, and New Zealand was of course missing, right? One of the five, well, you
We
know,
describe it
one of
as
the
the fifth eye's been stabbed, blinded.
blind, basically. And Miss New Zealand is missing, right? Yeah, you have an independent memo by Winston Peters himself, but when it comes to official representation of New Zealand to stand against China, it's not there. And yeah, that's and that's the campaigning that's going on. Yeah.
Is the Hong Kong demonstrations and the security law, is it getting much coverage in the New Zealand media? Because it certainly featured quite a bit in our news with a lot of experts weighing in, and we did sign that resolution.
Yeah, we that's right. The it was a was it a UK, Australia, Canada, United States. But in terms of what is happening, I thought, like, I'll quickly bring up the headlines here on my screen, having a quick scroll through them, and I don't really see anything about Hong Kong. I'm looking at the front page of some of our big newspapers here, and you know, where's Hong Kong? Editor's picks, latest news, latest headlines, popular headlines. Don't see anything about Hong Kong. I have seen one or two articles about Hong Kong, the fact that New Zealand is missing from the resolutions, but beyond that, it's not really considered to be a massive story in New Zealand, outside of select circles, obviously.
There's an account in the chat, Unshackled Chat, which it's posting quite a bit, so it's got my attention. Our patience has its limits, and through their comments, they seem to be applying that Jacinta Ardern, she has similar features to Michelle Obama, if you know what I mean.
I have seen that's been popular in New Zealand for, well, not popular, sorry. And that was the wrong word to use. There are like five people in New Zealand who try to push that around. But there's no there's that that's not going anywhere, and it's not, there's no evidence for that, except for in the weird fantasies of a couple of people on Facebook usually.
She must release. Oh, I'm surprised that it wasn't broadcast initially, the birth of her child.
Getting extra media coverage there.
Yes, but it
It's
would
not that she
also
needed
put
it.
this
It's not that she needed it.
to rest
Yeah,
as
but
well.
like, for no, only, like I said, it's not really something that comes up at all, except for I may have seen two or three individuals in the past 3 years attempt to make it a thing, and it's the old meme. Stop trying to make this a thing, because it's not happening. It's not going to be a thing.
The reason why I mention this about Jacinda Ardern and Michelle Obama, because mockery is the best way to keep leaders in check and on their toes.
I really don't think this one works. I know the Michelle Obama one has been popular in certain circles for years and years. Same thing with the Obama, some of the Obama ones as well, along those lines. It doesn't work, because it doesn't. It's too absurd. It's too absurd for anybody to take seriously.
Oh, Alex Jones has given a lot of coverage.
That proves my point, Tim. That proves my point.
Going back to mainstream media trying to get more revenue, News Corp Australia, one of Australia's largest media companies, announced its own cutbacks on Thursday, that it was closing 100 of its regional newspapers, well, printing them. Around 75% will be online only. The rest will close permanently. There'll be job losses. They haven't said how many, and it's basically due to a collapse in business advertising revenue. And I said this last night, and it's worth saying again on this show, that the media campaigned for the lockdowns, which have destroyed businesses who advertise in their publications. Yeah. So they've basically gone against their business interests.
Yeah, they didn't see that one coming, which is almost a little bit of a surprise. They would have made good money in the month leading up to it, and then suddenly realized that they killed their own cash cow. But in New Zealand, the big players have made that up with their $50 million donation from Jacinda. But in Australia, it seems that they are far less lucky. But the print in New Zealand has suffered as well. So same thing.
Because Bauer Media, who also they own all the magazines in Australia now, they were printing New Zealand's magazines, but not anymore.
Correct. Yeah, they were one of the first casualties, really. Mm-hmm.
And there's been mixed reactions to, because forget that News Corp is part of the vast right-wing conspiracy in Australia, according to former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd. So a lot of lefties have wanted to see its demise, but a lot of its they do consider a lot of their journalists still part of the mainstream media protection racket, where even though they're in competition, they all still have this racket to protect their own interests and crush smaller players.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. We've had some interesting developments here in New Zealand with regards to healthcare, and I maybe should have covered this earlier, but it's a bizarre story that's been reported, but should really be a big deal, and that is that a number of DHBs, the district health boards that run the healthcare system I think we have 11 of them, 11 different regions around New Zealand, and they have announced that they are moving Māori and Pacifica patients to the top of the elective surgery list. So they cancelled everybody's surgeries for several months. Now they're bringing people back, and they're basically saying, hey, if you are a part of an ethnic minority, then you're going to get special treatment. You get to move to the top of the list, which should be a massively big deal, because treatment is supposed to be based on need. That's the entire point of the socialist healthcare system, socialized healthcare system, where those who have the greater need get the greater priority. But of course, that now has fed through along racial lines, where they say, well, you know, the Māori tend to have worse health outcomes overall.
Don't realize what they're saying. Yeah. They're implying that that there is some sort of differences in in race when it comes to certain things, which they don't, where they like to say that race is just a social construct, where this is where they don't realize, but I think they might, that they're contradicting
but
themselves.
Whether it's genetic, so the argument can be made for certain diseases, it's apparent to be more genetic. It could be insulting to be in other ways too, where it's okay, either that they don't seek care, either they don't look after themselves as well. You know, you could,
which
you
is
could
also racist.
Which is, all of that is racist. What seems more likely, which they don't really get, is a poverty issue where they've already been essentially racially targeting poverty measures, which for some reason, or rather obvious to us, but a perplexing reason to them, continues to create more poverty and continues to keep these ethnic minorities in poverty. And they institutionalized intergenerational poverty among these groups in New Zealand. And now they're like, oh, why do these people have worse health outcomes? And it's because the poorer people are, the worse their health is. And so you come back to the whole COVID-19 situation where you've impoverished the entire economy, you've impoverished the entire nation, you've actually done massive damage to the health and well-being of the nation. So people are, people's health is, on the whole, the nation's health is going to deteriorate now massively. And simply targeting, now racially targeting healthcare, by saying, oh yeah, if you're Maori or Pacifica, you get to go on the top, you get to have your elective surgery first, and if you're European or Asian, you get to wait an extra week or two, which, that could be the death of you, really. I know I have heard many stories of people who have died on waiting lists, etc. Those people who have private health insurance tend to be better off. I read a story today of somebody who had private health insurance for cancer, had cancer treatment done at the beginning of, in end of last year before Christmas, and they had got it all in because they had private health care. If they'd been on the public system, they would have been delayed by 2 or 3 weeks. That may have been it. They may have been dead. And that certainly is common in New Zealand. And that does not get factored into the numbers and the statistics, right? Oh, well, so-and-so died of cancer. It wasn't that, okay, well, they were on a waiting list for 2 or 3 weeks too long, and that's why they died. And that is just... And where's the coverage on this as well? Where's the coverage on this? No, there isn't. There's no real coverage on this. The outrage has to be completely muted, and at the same time, what is a blatantly racist policy of the health boards in New Zealand now, it just is swept under the carpet.
The media have tried as much as they can to racialize the pandemic, but of course you've just gone through why a different people might. From any demographic might be affected by the coronavirus in different ways. But their arguments always fall flat on the fact that this is a virus that does not discriminate. It's a parasitic organism. Yeah. It doesn't have reason.
No, and so they say, oh, well, they actually did do this when they targeted certain help to certain communities. One of the justifications of the community roadblocks was as well that back in the Spanish flu, the Maori communities were hit worse because they had they didn't have the healthcare systems weren't as good. They were more rural, more isolated, again generally poorer, which tends to result in worse health outcomes. And now they're saying, okay, we need to target extra spending to stop this from happening again. Again, without addressing the root cause, which is if you're condemning certain sections of your population to poverty, especially intergenerational poverty, then you're shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic, where at the end of the day, everybody is going to end up worse off, and you're just giving a slightly more being incredibly racist now. In saying, oh, we're fixing whatever injustice, and in multiplying these injustices by not actually looking at the very same policies that caused the problems in the first place.
In Australian politics, late Friday afternoon is known for when governments take out the political trash and dump bad news, where they hope that it will just... it won't be in the news cycle for long. Everyone will be talking about the footy because the NRL started last night. And there's Friday night footy tonight. But of course, shows like such as ours on a Friday night. So I'm very alert when I'm doing my pre-show preparations to be on the lookout for any trash being taken out, so I can mention it on the show. I talked last week about the tax office accounting error on the JobKeeper program, that it was 3 million Australians, not 6 million on, and that's going to cost 70 billion, not 130 billion. Well, this week, we've had quite a controversial a government robo-debt program, which Centrelink welfare recipients were harassed by automated calls for debts they supposedly owed, and it was basically they used an income averaging method from the Australian Tax Office, which and the minister in charge of all of this was Stuart Robert. So I'm not sure if you remember him. He was the one that claimed the MyGov website was hacked when it was just overloaded with traffic. So the federal government will refund $721 million worth of debts it clawed back through its controversial robo-debt scheme. Service Australia said in a statement that 470,000 debts would be waived, with refunds be rolled out from July. More than 370,000 people were affected, with some having been issued multiple notices. People who already paid their debts would be refunded. This is a quote from Stuart Robert. The best advice is that we have that raising a debt wholly or partially on the basis of ATO average income is not sufficient under law. That's because a court recently decided that that was not sufficient under law. So basically, they're just complying with a court decision. Therefore, we return the money and move forward with our income compliance program. And the Stuart Robert, Herald Sun journalist James Campbell, this is him here, pretty much summarized how he's viewed in Canberra, and I think pretty much around the nation, as a clown. He was also the one that racked up tens of thousands of dollars worth of mobile internet charges, though it was all good because he paid it back, tell it back to the people that his robo-debt program harassed. This was a disgraceful, I would say, a government program which targeted the vulnerable unfairly through what was dud maths. And
the models projected. It's another, it basically is another case of flawed modeling. We could have a segment on that every single week.
Bill Shorten, who's now the shadow government services minister, said the unlawful program caused psychological harm. He is right on this, but I would also say that Bill Shorten caused psychological harm to that Asian pie shop lady who he abused back in 2012. So the class action against the federal government is going to continue, because I do think that the federal government, they should be also forced to pay for the psychological harm that they caused.
Exactly, and they've got a case.
Yeah, always with these sorts of crackdown on dole bludgers, they hardly recoup any additional money. It's basically a virtue signaling exercise with. It normally costs more to implement such a program that you can ever hope to recruit. And Centrelink should sort itself out before it attempts to go after people who they allege have been overpaid. Because Centrelink
and they won't look at any of the actual underlying social issues, the actual policies that cause social breakdown, family breakdown, you know, welfare dependency through generations. None of that stuff they actually look at. But you only have the two factions there. One which says I will give them less money, and the other faction says we'll give them more money. And nobody actually, has the moral fortitude to take a serious look at the underlying issues.
And I'll finish off the show by just confirming, because Alan Jones a couple of weeks back announced that he was retiring from radio. Today was his last 2GB breakfast broadcast. So Ben Fordham, who's in 2GB Drive, he'll be hosting the 2GB breakfast program from next week. Alan Jones will continue with his columns in the News Corp papers and on Sky News. So Alan Jones won 226 radio surveys, been on the air for 35 years, age 79. Obviously he said some controversial things over the years, but he's certainly one of the better ones.
Yeah, that's the, and I mean, good radio hosts are hard to come by. We're actually seeing some what feels like a little bit of improvement on the radio scene in New Zealand, actually. I was on the radio a couple of weeks ago, which was quite fun. We will finish the show here because we're over time. I was going to do a little segment on that National Party leader, Todd Muller, who had been captured on had a photo taken of his MAGA hat.
You've got one behind you. It's on camera.
I've got one behind me, and I was gonna. Can finish the show with it. But he had his MAGA hat on display at his in his old office. Mm. Now that he's the National Party leader, the media got very upset, and so his MAGA hat now apparently has been put into a box. And it was announced by his deputy, Nikki Kay, that he had put his hat into a box and that he wouldn't take it back out, and that she would get him a National Party hat instead. But, I'm going to keep the MAGA hat and no National Party hat for me. Thank you very much. You can see my new Conservative hat behind me on that side. They had a pretty rough start to their first week. He's already back down. On a number of issues, they wrongly described one of their MPs as being Māori, because they were like, oh, we need more ethnic minorities on our front bench, and we're too white and we've got a virtue signal. But they accidentally virtue signaled too hard by ascribing a racial minority status to one of their MPs when he didn't have it. So, they tried to play the woke game, and it's backfiring on them. They should have stood by their guns and taken on the media, but, you know, they're basically National Party's decided to go the woke route, and we'll see if that benefits them in the polls in the next few weeks and months leading up to the election. But currently, I'm not seeing a huge amount of enthusiasm for that kind of approach.
So I gather Todd Muller is not going to wear close to the election Make Ardern Go Away hat.
No, which... well, that's what I don't have one of those. I've got my.
You can buy them now. Yep.
You can still buy them. Mm.
I'd
held up the little stickers on a couple of the shows. It must be in one of my drawers back there, but I'll grab one out to put in the background next time. But I'm still tempted to get a Make I Don't Grow Away hat, or maybe a Make Aotearoa Great Again hat, which is good to trigger everybody left, right, and center. We'll see what we do. It's going to be exciting time leading up to the election, I think. Even though it almost feels like the outcome is predetermined, that almost makes the election more entertaining, because there's always a blunder that's made along the line by the presumed victor.
Is Right Minds planning to do some rebel media type on the ground reporting during the election and see if you can get arrested by Jacinta's handlers like David Menzies?
Yeah, I did see that story, and I haven't got anybody around to do any of that at the moment. And we may get some volunteers, who knows? But I've got to do a little bit of campaigning myself, so I can get up on the stage, and who knows? Seeing that I'm actually running for parliament this time, we may have to have fun in some different ways instead.
So you definitely feel that Jacinta is unstoppable now.
I wouldn't say entirely unstoppable, but there's no reason to believe that she won't win at this point. Yeah. It's obviously a long way away in political terms, but I don't see that the either of the opposition parties in Parliament, at least, actually have what it takes to beat her. Don't see that happening at the moment. So get, you know, you need to have a spine. You got to have some fun. You probably need a lot more than that, but at least we will we'll do as best as we can with New Conservative.
Our next state election in Victoria isn't until November 2022, so still a while away, but as I previously said, the Victorian Liberal opposition is starting to find its voice, thanks in part to Liberal frontbencher Tim Smith calling Dan Andrews a friendless loser and running a poll whether to call him Dictator Dan or Chairman Dan. There are two protests tomorrow in Melbourne. There is another anti-lockdown protest. Hopefully, Victoria Police respect people's civil rights. And there's also a pro-Hong Kong protest. And given that the Victorian government signed a memorandum of understanding with the Chinese Communist Party over One Belt, One Road, we shall see if Victoria Police attempt to shut that down as well.
We will look forward to hearing any newsworthy events that come out of that on next week's show. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in on this show. If you wanted a super chat, now is your last call for that. And otherwise, we'll be back next week. You can find more of me on rightminds.nz. Thank you for the bfd.org.nz as well. All of my work is published there, and this stream is also embedded on their website. Please do support your conservative media here in New Zealand and in Australia.
The true diverse independent media.
That's right.
All right, good night, everyone. Have a good weekend.
Good night.